corruption for obviously.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not.
Cannot just really look from the side of the. You're talking about limiting from both sides. Now, if you're gonna put it in there for protecting the operator from government, then now you can also put counter measures to protect government from crooked business operators. I mean, in business there is risk. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good. And then maybe we can move on, because I think.
Chairperson, I don't have a solution to this problem, but this problem here, the department had tried to find a way of compensating operators, because that was an LTTA requirement. So we had some few years back tried to find a way, and really we just couldn't find a way of how which is the most logical way, and what criteria do you use to really compensate operators. We weren't able to find a technical solution to that problem. The second thing, Chairperson, is that I agree with this sentiment, which says that what criteria will be used to determine which operator has to cease operating along a route, because there may be, say, 20 operators on that route and you need to remove two. How do you determine which two? Can't just select them arbitrarily. So those are actually real practical problems. And although we have a line there which says that the minister may make regulations on the procedures to be followed in the proceeding under section 1 and 2, I don't think that's actually a very easy question to answer. But I think it's something we'll have to really think about much more clearly.
Well, maybe sometimes you can't write waterproof legislation. Okay, I'll come to you in a while. Okay, you can maybe take it back. Let's move on, shall we?
Yeah. Chairman, we've dealt with section 50, so we can go to point 25. 24.
Page 9,
at the bottom. This is about permits for, it says in 56.1, all permits issued for a definite period remain valid, but lapse when that period expires, provided that if such permit is still valid on the date calculated that 7 years from the date of commencement of this act is lapsed on the date. All permits issued for an indefinite period will remain valid subsection 57-58, but lapse 7 years after the date of commencement of this act. The holder may apply within that period for its conversion to an operating license, etc. Comment that we have is the following. Look at section 57-58. The lapsing of a definite period permit after 7 years after the commencement of the act is unacceptable for the following reasons. Two reasons. Firstly, maybe that the ITP is not in place. Hopefully it will not be the case. Like ITPs everywhere, and that the services have to be rendered under such time as the ITP has been finalized and implemented, because we're talking about a lot of areas in the country around that. And secondly, if the operator operates a service not provided for an ITP, but has sufficient patronage, in other words, a commercial contract with a business, for instance, render the service necessary and resulting in income for him or her, it will be unconstitutional in our view to take away a right that the operator has in terms of his work permit. So that you have a contract with a private company, like Alice, I think, and you contracted to them. Now this permit will last, but it has nothing to do with subsidies, and the ITP doesn't make provision for that. Why must it last?
Okay, thank you.
When we said 7 years, we considered the fact that if you've got an installment, and we also consider the fact that if you have got a contract, let's say we pick and pay the others, your payment is actually dependent on the number of years, contractual years that you have with a business concern. So I don't know what's taking, and also the question of convention, you need to deal with it.
Chair, I think this is a misunderstanding. It's not saying all permits will lapse after 7 years. It's saying if they're not converted to operating licenses, and then there's a whole procedure for converting them. So it's only people who fail to convert. Now, of course, we'll have the situation again that everyone comes the day before the deadline, so that process will have to be managed carefully over the 7 years.
But apart from that, okay. That's what I understood.
Okay. About the conversion. So you won't lose your rights. You won't lose your rights if you operate such a contract. That's not an ITP, but it's self-funded.
Yeah, so you will lose your right to an indefinite permit. It will become a 7-year operating license. Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine.
25, 57, 1C says, in either case, cancel any permit of the holder authorizing service on routes in the area on an uncontracted basis, not carry forward such authorization to the operating license mentioned in paragraph A, unless authorization forms part of a contract. Our comment is, we're not in agreement with this. If a contract does not include services that are currently operated on a commercial basis, why must such a license be withdrawn? And
some of the handouts
it looks like in the further section.
Could I try to explain what we're trying to achieve there? See, what happens currently is that the permits do not align with the contract. So you have some big bus operators over the last 20, 30 years have expanded their permits so that they can now operate anywhere at any time. So we're saying that in an area where there's a contract, the permits must be converted to operating licenses specific to the contract. And then any routes not included must be removed, that's essentially, to make those operating licenses specific to the contract. This is only in the case of scheduled services under contract.
One refers to the NPTR giving of non-contracted services. And this is confusing as it's not taking part of the NPTR can only use interpretation of further transport services. Although Section 25 provides the minister to designate any other service to the NPTR that's not to be done usually in the government direct. 3.6.6.1.
That's the first thing.
The NPTR only deals with interprovincial transport, and we're saying that in the case of an uncontracted, in brackets, interprovincial service, this is what happens. It only deals with interprovincial transfer.
Can we just talk about the way the word is captured? Is that the intention? It's just something I'm seeing something coming through, but maybe it's from transfer of an authority message. It's an authority message for seven.
What?
Mm-hmm. But I thought that this is an authority message. But I do agree with you.
Jay, do you see
it
transfer of to another person, but it must be approved by the entity. So the entity will check that new person's criminal record, etc., and if acceptable, can be, because they are sold, or in the case of an estate, it can be left to an heir, but then the entity must approve a transfer.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's
fine.
Okay.
I think we can have discussions with Neville and them about this afterwards. So that when it gives the operating licensing authority quite wide discretion.
Yeah.
You apply
it's
the
not very plain. It's not very plain on you, not everyone has got. If you prefer to section 76.
Three, yes. It's about charter services. And three says where application is made for an operating license for vehicle hire with drivers as charter services. The entity granting the operating license must evaluate whether the services should rather be provided as metered taxi services. And if it grants the application of a charter service, that's appropriate condition.
Okay. And what
you
said is on the page 11 of series.
Yes.
Why could there be that expression
yes.
The reason for that is the reason for requiring meter taxis to have meters to protect the passengers and so on, and those meters must comply with SABA standards. Now, it's easy to evade that system by the car plus driver system. For example, car rental companies have car plus drivers, which are essentially meter taxi services, but no meters. So we're just giving the discretion to the entity, which they actually have at present, and we're pointing them in the direction so don't allow people to abuse that system. And that's all we're saying. Rather require them to have a meter.
But Mr. Chairman, what about the coach charter?
What we're saying...
But I mean, if you're operating a coach charter and it's a viable business and so forth, then it's hardly something that is operating when you run the car. Okay. And what it's saying here, which I really, because what we don't have in South Africa compared to any other country in the world or any other city, though, is we have a very underdeveloped a critical sector for mobility. And so all we're saying here is remember in your integrated transport plans and all of that, that meter taxis are part of the mix. I mean, it's not a qualifying coach. It's just saying that there are some coaches where meter taxis are appropriate mode.
That's from the date, determined by the Minister, by notice in the Gazette, no one may operate tourist transport services unless accredited by the National Public Transport Agency. Okay? And the comment is, Syracuse requires the power to qualify to existing tourist transport operators. Some operators have definite term periods, permits, while others still have indefinite term periods. Will the Minister and Patron apply after their permits have expired, or will a specific date be determined by the Minister?
One has to read it with 91 as well. The idea is that all tourist operators will have to apply, whether they've got permits or not. This is what we understand the industry wants. But there will be a cut-off date, and after that date, any operator who's not accredited will not be able to provide tourist transport services. And we think if you read 90 and 91, that's clear enough.
Okay, thanks. Let me finish, Mr. Chair. Section 95, which is basically the answer out such situations where the minimum product does not supply them in time specified in any such degree. There are no such requirements of supply. In accordance with the principle that the minimum developed, application for the minimum policy or the absence of the recommendation by the minimum policy by the national public rights regulator to ensure uniformity in the process. So this may be in the regulation.
There will be regulations on that.
Okay.
And this is obviously an operator, tourism operator friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah. To say that, and this is like the earlier thing that we're talking about, that, and it's not that it's true. That we want them to operate with some other entities that are to be stopped. So there's no entity.
There needs to be that uniformity as well in the application.
And we're sure that's what it's going to be.
My friend from SASCA may want to deal with Section 97, but we all on our talks about the tourism industry. But 97 says accredited operators must renew their accreditation every 5 years in a prescribed manner, failing which the accreditation is that. The tourism task team report was recommended that the monitoring of tourist operator service be done on a continuous basis, besides visits, checking of vehicles, etc. If units have received inspections, it becomes evident that the operator no longer complies with the accreditation requirements, the accreditation will be withdrawn. Finally, the individual accreditation list will be irrelevant. And this provision was recommended that accreditation should be for an indefinite period. Then after that, if a few accredited, once you have two accredited, then you comply on a continuous basis with the accreditation criteria.
Assuming that there's the ability, and that relates to the earlier point about the capacity of the safety of the national company is regular. Our favour where this is going, the recommendation of the tourism, which is that we have ongoing testing and evaluation, not just for tourist operators, but with other regions for all operations, instead of this bureaucratic process rather than operationally done.
Correct.
Let's
go through the problem. Yes, this is the idea, definitely. There must be this ongoing monitoring, and the department will be sitting with SATSA to develop the regulations on that. But the feeling was, in our imperfect world, that at some point, whether it's 5 years or whatever, you do need a clean-up. That was the reasoning behind it. But one can look into it.
No, I support what you're saying. I mean, in other words, we're both things that you're saying, which is that we need to move towards sustainability across the of having regulation, oversight, which is continuous and active, with garages and making facilities and so forth. Isn't just the case of ad hoc things, a couple of packets on the trap, or with a 5 years, whatever, renewal, which comes from India. But we don't have that. And therefore, I'd be reluctant to write into the legislation at this point, indefinite.
Remember that you have the right, and you can lose the right if you don't comply. Why do you want to have a renewal every 5 years?
Because at least it triggers a process, some kind of evaluation, even if, in the foreseeable future, it might be a rather competitive process.
Well, it's much better than what we had before.
Thanks for reminding me, because when we come to chat, thanks to you.
Yes.
Anything. Yeah, I just wanted to check from the department whether under these particular amendments you did still accept changes to the issues.
Okay.
Because when I read this,
Absolutely. The thing there, that in the case of non-tourist services, all existing permits will have to be converted to operating licenses, yeah. In the case of minibus, taxis, buses, yeah.
This is a
system.
This is a system. Yeah.
This only applies to tourist transport.
Sorry, we're across the
You are saying provincial tourism boards, and there's nothing like that in this act. What you are raising now, it's not like that in this act. But what I want to check, is that in the, I don't have my principal act, the NLTTA. I just want to check whether previously was that the accreditation must be done at national level, or it should be done at provincial level. This question, I ask this question, let me just check quickly. Is it in, but now, Norman, what you give me, this one is written in code. quickly get there. No, but the current one that we are amending now. It says no.
This is an act. There's a National Land Transport Transition Act which is in force currently.
Okay.
And we are going to introduce a new legislation. Not an amendment, but we're not going to do that in the ending force. What we're doing is we're changing the team.
But still what I'm raising is that there's no way where it talks about provincial accreditation.
There's no
role for provinces here.
I think I understand. Sorry, that's the problem. What we're saying is that part of the process may be requiring recommendations from a provincial or national tourism board. And SETS has got a comment on that, but I'm sure they'll raise it. But that's what it says.
What we're dealing with here in the 1997 is tourism and how tourist transport services get created by a new entity which is the National Tourism Board.
If you look at 91.3, it says if the National Public Transport Regulator is satisfied that any national or provincial tourism body has an acceptable system in place to accredit operators of tourist transport services, the National Public Transport Regulator may accept such accreditation by such a tourism body without requiring the operator to apply in terms of subsection 1, provided the operator also complies with the technical requirements. The comment is there needs to be a fixed procedure for an operator to obtain accreditation. It should be done through the application of the MPTR. This may also be in the regulation.
No doubt you will regulate it.
See, the reason for this provision was that in future there may be a tourism authority that accredits tourist operators in all ways, transport and other ways. And then we're saying if that happens, the MPTR can say, all right, we accept that instead of going through the own accreditation process. It's just if that happens in future. I know that SETS has a problem with national or provincial. I feel it should be a national body, but that was the reasoning behind it.
And that's where I picked up now. I think they've got the understanding.
Did
Chairman, thank you very much. And the last one is that just a comment on cancellation. If you look at 92.3, on cancellation of operators' accreditation, the national, the NPTR must remove that operator's name from the register, get in terms of section 96. The comment is that operator must also return a certificate of accreditation and the vehicle tokens issued to him. Just a comment around that, that must also be returned, otherwise the operator keeps that and you don't know what's going on if you're on the road and you stop the operator. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Those are our comments.
Okay, thanks very much. I mean, some of the detail we obviously dealt with too much detail that we're looking, but I mean, generally, and I think the key for us, we certainly will be looking at the vested license. I think we need to think, and we're going to be more careful at that. And then some of the detail was very useful. I mean, you know, others perhaps you're pretending to talk about the Jesse talking to them, with a view to influencing the regulations, and that's fine. Okay, thanks very much for that. Let's then move on to Thatcher.
I apologize, I just realized now when we did that that I have failed to put page numbers, so I'm really a few feet to track where all the pages are there. I do apologize.
Find it in my
these are the chamber, the RC documents. Sorry to do that to you again. No, unfortunately not. They arrive on the email together, and there are hard copies which your lady is bringing now. Okay, so that's the one starts at the top with the private sector tourism submission to Portfolio Committee for Transport. And there's two others. One is the final report. That's a two. And then the third one has a star at the top called Tourism Grading Council. That would be set to three. However, to make your life easier, sets of two and three are to be taken away for further consideration should reference be one made. I'm going to keep my comments this afternoon for brevity purposes. Two sets of one. However, it is important that the other two documents are addendums. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the honourable members of the committee for the time given. We've been looking forward to this. Just to clarify, you see that on the top of Chapter 1, you'll see it's a private sector submission, and that's just reflecting that Sabara, Sats, and Savrala works through the Tourism Business Council of South Africa. There have been a lot of accusations that the tourism industry is very fragmented. It's not the case. So we've done it through the Tourism Business Council. However, instead of wasting resources in multiple associations, SATS will be doing the presentation, and SABOA here as well, because they're the primary associations under the umbrella of TBC that have relevance to this process. Right. I'm going to be able to go through some a little bit faster, but let's clarify. We've already noted that there were multiple versions, and that was just our put on in the attachment as set to 2 is the report and recommendation of the steering committee. And we'll deal with that a little bit later. Just now. And then the final, the chapter 3 is referred to here as addendum 2. the final working document is prepared by Grant Thornton of the Grading Council to develop a grading accreditation process. Those are for later reference. We start then with, on the first page of SATSA 1, we see preface to tourism industry comments. The article didn't go through, but the essence in terms of the writing is that the Minister of the Department of Transport agreed to a process after extensive lobbying by tourism, also at ministerial level, to try and resolve certain problems that have been alluded to already in terms of capacity issues of provincial licensing boards, etc., etc. And in terms of the comment made in Parliament, a steering committee was constituted and went ahead. It had already met and was now given wider powers and was very, very inclusive. I think it's very important that perhaps the members are aware of this if they weren't already. It's not just the bigger associations. We went through a six-month process of finding extra SMME associations or SMME groupings at provincial level, at national level, at city level to try and get the input and to create an all-inclusive process. The outcome of that is contained in the document SATSA 2, the final report, which is the recommendation that was submitted to the Department of Transport and considered in the development of the tourism section of the National Land Transport Bill. As we say, we're very pleased to see that this consultative process, which was very extensive, has been consulted by the Department of Transport in developing this bill, and we thank them for it. The most notable entity that comes out is the creation of this one, as we just spoke a few minutes ago, of the NPTR, the National Transport Regulator, the Public Transport Regulator, to regulate tourism services within the Republic, because tourism services are, by and large, a nationwide competency and not a local-based competency. We do also note that the report, and the essence of the report has been taken over, that the NPTR will do this through an accreditation process. And this is the important part, through a primary requirement of two detailed inspections of the operator before granting any accreditations, a technical one and a tourism industry-specific operational one. The purpose of our submission today is that we want to try and ensure that we attain the true essence of the report and what was recommended. We feel that while we're going in the right direction, there may be one or two details or detailed aspects that may stray from that and might cause problems later. Just, we do find on the second page, starting with requirements at the top, there's two. We find ourselves at a dual disadvantage, obviously, as various versions of the bill, but more importantly, two brackets. In order to make comment on this, we recognize that this is a legislative skeleton, which is contained within the bill without sight of the regulation that will give the flesh. Yes, we've been involved with the Department of Transport officials, and the interactions have revealed that the bulk of the concepts will be solved and sorted out in the regulation. However, as has been raised by Sabo, our wording is slightly different. We're doing this on tickets, on credit, and assuming that all parties will be as honourable as they intend to be, which we trust it will. But however, we're just noting our provisional concerns for that. All right, that's also dealt with. Sabo has dealt extensively under their Section 8 submission, so I think we've had sufficient debate on that topic. We have made some comments. We don't face only the tourism ones. There are, we understand, some significant ones in other ones, but that's not our scope of activity. We are also encouraged by the verbal comments made by DOT officials that industry will be consulted in the development of regulations to support this. On to page 3. The problem is that often in the various stages of development, the development of the laws and the regulations are conducted in isolation. One group goes off, does this, one group does that, and they come back and there's a public interaction. But it's a very much more stilted and slower format. If we put forward our comments in writing, there's no guarantee that the ideas will be taken on board. We accept that. Or that they may misunderstand them and then new problems may arise. So that's one of the problems we have with this process. We're just noting, we're not accusing, just noting that we're concerned. We'd like to get to a best-of-breed situation where everyone who has relevant input can do it in a workshop where that you can go through without the more formal ones. And hence, we're suggesting a select committee type of structure that's up to the department and the portfolio committee and the minister to come up with. But some form of formalized structure. If We do take note, and Sabah also raised the concern. We accept that it's very difficult to put stakeholders in legislation. We accept that. We just like some sort of more formalized process. We can do an interaction on a workshop type basis. We can hammer out issues to their conclusion to the satisfaction of all. And we apply all the minds that we have and all the experience, and that includes the parliamentarians, who are a crucial part of that, that we come out with something that's inclusive of everyone's input. Right, so we have gone to the summary on that part is that we're going in the right direction. In relation to some of the debates raised by Saboa in terms of their comments on Section 50 and 55, that the deadlock, the right of first refusal, etc., and also Section 48, who loses when someone has to be chosen to go out, one of the essences that we feel comes through this is that the current act that we're running under and the bill that envisages it is that the government is negotiating with vehicles, the issuing of licenses. So I'm deviating the text here, but it's in response to comments. Is negotiating with vehicles. And indirectly, the owner of the vehicle is by default deemed to be the operator. Just as one of the comments I wanted to make into that process, is we get the relationship or the sequence of relationships correct. We have government interacting in a very structured way with the operator, who then employs vehicles to do the service. We may find it's a step easier towards doing the contract. Instead of trying to do a contract via a vehicle, we do it with the operator. And once the operator is a known entity, as will be seen in the tourism example, we feel then that the negotiations can proceed far more equitably. All right. So then we move on to page 4 of that, which is headed envisaged process flow for the regulation of tourism. Sorry, okay. Go back. Thank you.
In terms of this, those are all broadly welcome comments. Nothing very much for us for the moment to chew on in terms of the actual legislation.
Not yet, that'll come down. That was just comments in terms of this.
Yeah.
Part of the essence of SATSA 2, the final report, was that we want to link the relationship in the correct way, that the operator become a known entity. Currently, the legislative process makes for a situation where the vehicle is known to whoever it is, whether it be a permit board, a local authority, or whatever they've envisaged. The essence of the report was that far better control is exercised by government once it's dealing with a known entity, because vehicles in and of themselves don't drive, they don't crash by themselves, they don't not service themselves.
Okay. Well, let's see where you're taking it.
Okay. We're going through page 4 is through to the 6th page. So the next 3 pages are an envisaged flow of process. In the same as just and given. Identified places this morning for reference purposes. It's a summary of the detail that was in the SATSA 2 document, and it gives an outline for everyone to understand where we're coming to, the process of how we see the regulation of the tourism services that the bill mostly gets correctly, but we just got to understand the essence of what we're trying to achieve to see if we can check it back against the details of the clause by clause to see if we've got it. Right? The process we agree with in the bill, as it is identified, that's from a date, tourism will convert to a new process, the tourism transport, whereby old operators will have to convert into the new system. And that will be handled by a process called the NPTR, National Public Transport Regulator, the NPTR. That NPTR is responsible to create the procedures to accredit the operators. Remember, accreditation is far more than just issuing a piece of paper. It's to make an assessment of the operator to see if he, she, or they are able to operate the services from a technical and operational point of view, that they fit in proper persons, that they meet the prescribed operational technical requirements. We see that the accreditation of operators will be a hands-on process, that the NPTR will need to consider the establishment of various offices around the country to be in contact with the industry. Again, that's a suggestion. And these offices controlled, so they're not local offices with their own identity, they're offices as an expression of the national body. We feel that's important. Processing the applications with the necessary primary inspections. They will accredit and issue the relevant documentation, and then they will, the important part, monitor accredited operators within the area of operation in an ongoing and active manner. And there's a suitable blend of random and scheduled on-site depot inspections by the NPTR inspectors. So we envisage that the NPTR officers will be staffed with their own complement of licensed, authorized, whatever the wording is, vehicle inspectors, management process to oversee all functioning, and the necessary legal administrative staff to back that up. So point 2. So that's how we was envisaged from the process of body, and it's been codified in a lot of aspects under the NPTR. We see the accreditation process procedures to be followed, and we're suggesting the MPTR, fully resourced and funded offshoot, will do both the primary accreditation, the full primary accreditation, and that, remind you, is a technical and an operational. And then if you turn to the fifth page, which is headed 2A, technical accreditation at the top, MPTR itself will be responsible for technical analysis. We accept in the Department of Transport has the skills, inspectors and what have you, to be able to look at the technical side. Are there sufficient depots or ability to maintain, suitability of maintenance staff, suitability of admin record keeping with regard to the maintenance and legalities. These will be done by the in-house and technically competent vehicle inspectors, and we'll be using the powers vested in them through the MPTR, the bill we're discussing, the RTA, the RTR, and the NLTA as we're discussing now. So those will be the powers given to those inspectors, and they will carry out the primary accreditation. The operational one is slightly different because obviously the Department of Transport doesn't have within it the skills to do tourism because its focus is on transport, and we find the suitable tourism process to do this. Now, it's important in 2B operational accreditation, in the second paragraph, we refer to an entity called the Tourism Grading Council of South Africa, not that that's cast in stone, just to note that it's in a separate process that the Minister of Tourism is still, on an ongoing basis, concerned about the quality of tourism services in order to market to and provide suitable services, that he had tasked the creation of the Tourism Grading Council to look at properties primarily, and then later mandated that the Tourism Grading Council look to investigate accrediting, well, initially grading, but then it was deemed to be accreditation as to tour operators. So there is a process there, and it might well have relevance. We just refer to it as a basis for comparison. Whatever the department chooses as the body in the future, that still has to be determined. We're just referring to a process that already exists and can probably be expanded. Yes. It's very important, though, we feel, and we'll come into that in the detail, that it be a nationally based one so that it's a fair approach of standards across the country so everyone applies to the same standards. So you don't see variations developing in a provincial or on a city basis. It would make some operators from certain cities at a greater disadvantage to others, or some might even have a greater advantage. A lot of that, and the detail of that, is contained in the SATA Document 3, which is the final draft of the Tourism Grading Council, and can also be used as a reference point. That process of the Grading Council, just to note, ended because there was the Grading Council conducted, again, a very extensive process of consultation with all stakeholders over a number of months in various parts of the country to make sure everyone got representation. But we got to a stalling point because it was recognized that there were some problems in the NLCTA, which we all recognize. I'm sure your committee and your members, the honorable members, are very aware of, and that's why we're moving to the new bill. That there were some problems with the legislation that tourism couldn't resolve, and it had to wait until the Transport Act was in place that we could go. So that's where that came to. But those documents are there for onward perusal by you. So when we're using the Grading Council name, it's inter alia, it can be used for anybody that's duly appointed. Okay. But this function of the Grading Council type body, the tourism accredited body, is to do the ongoing operational inspections at intervals and to do the primary inspection of the operator to see if they are genuinely in the tourism industry. There's a number of bases on this. Is that interactions with the Department of Transport revealed that their biggest concern was that operators refused services on a commuter basis would use tourism applications as a backdoor to try and enter and cause friction on routes and whatever. So this is part of the way to make sure that people applying to the MPTR for tourism services would be tourism service genuinely, assessed by a tourism body who would be able to tell the difference. That's the primary basis. On the sixth page, we have application for accreditation. Again, the application for accreditation and licensing of tour operators, section 4, just deals with the process of how you'd apply for those. Again, physically through various offices, should that be possible. They have to complete the forms, pay the fee, submit to the primary inspections before going any further. Then the accreditations and inspections have to be done before the MPTR can make a decision. That's the important part, is that we feel that both have to be completed so that both reports will be considered on an equal basis before the 5 designated officials, such as they be, to make a decision on the granting of the accreditation or not. If it's done in isolation with one or the other, we feel that it doesn't do the process sufficient justice. Once that is approved, the MPTR has decided the operator does meet the requirements, The operator will be issued with suitable documentation. I see in the reference to the bill we do talk about a certificate of accreditation, so I'll continue using that wording. And then the MPTI is tasked to do register these accredited operators so that at any point law enforcement can refer back to a known quantity and see if they comply. We do agree that the concerns of law enforcement, that there must be some way to identify the vehicles that fall under this process, and we need to develop some sort of token disk or process that sits on the vehicle that can link that vehicle to the operator that law enforcement can track up on. We would suggest smart technology would be the way to go, but we'll work with whichever process as we move towards that system. Section 5 deals with dual use of tourism vehicles, and we do need to recognize this for the purposes of discussion that some tourism vehicles are used for operations not covered by the definitions provided in the tourism transport services and definitions provided in transport services generally. That's a reaction to the market. It's sort of international trends, but that shouldn't be what guides us. The fact is that you need to be able to use the vehicles for different parts of the service that a tourist or group of tourists would consider one service to them. On arrival, whether they come from Johannesburg going to Cape Town, Osaka going to Cape Town, or London going to Johannesburg, they would see one service provided to them to meet all their needs for, a two-week period. But if you do have the narrow definitions provided by the Transport Act, that vehicle is often providing three or four different categories of service. And we feel you have to recognize that tourism vehicles provide a tourism service, and you will need dual accreditation or process to allow things, process that allows the definition of what the vehicle is doing to comply with both the tourism market and with the requirements of the Act. So that's just something to be considered. We've already, in Professor Walter's submission, mentioned the process of charter. Take, for example, the charter of a Luxury 44. That's charter vehicle. Put a tourist guide on board, and it now suddenly becomes a tourist service, but the vehicle would have been permitted as a charter. You understand the complexities. But that's all we're trying to do, is background to that. On the seventh page of the submission, we get to the heading details.
Do you want to dwell there, or do you want to...
Well,
the substantive point we've made here is to present us
with a particular version of what you hope the National Transport Regulator will be doing, with a question mark behind it. I mean, in other words, you're exploring as to whether that's what you're saying here, this quite proactive, quite capacitated entity, which you hope to see, visiting garages and maintenance and so on. I take it that part of the input here is to put a question mark behind that and ask, is that what's envisaged by the department? And secondly, is that what's being enabled by the legislation? Do you want to dwell on that big question now, or do you want to wait till we get to Section 24, for instance?
If it pleases the chairman, could we just have it in principle discussion? We'd like that. But we're not... Looking at the regulations, we see some essence of it, quite a few parts already into the new bill, so we accept that that's where we're thinking. But we don't know which bits have been excluded and which bits are...
Okay. So we just see whether there's a quick response. Not whether within a few weeks' time after the legislation hopefully gets passed, there'll be such an entity in place. But is that where we're trying to go over that kind of version of a national public transport regulation?
Chairperson, I think broadly that is the kind of direction that we are going. With respect to all the kind of details that they've actually provided here, we've actually not got to that point yet. But I think some useful pointers on taking things forward, yes.
Okay, let's reserve the first... You also want to add,
Just on a point of clarity, the last point... If I understand the industry correctly, they're saying that when an operator is accredited, he or she should be able to provide any charter service as well. Am I understanding that correctly?
Let's come to that in a moment. Let's just check the bigger question. The answer is yes, although an admission that I haven't quite thought about it in that kind of detail yet, but that's the sort of direction.
So, Chairman, just the detail provided was we accused you of not giving us the regulations to assess the Act. So we thought we'd better give you the detail we saw behind it in order for you to assess our submission.
I think that's right. It also helps us to understand what it is that you have in mind and to see whether
Not narrowly SATA, but the tourism industry through the consultant process.
Okay.
Maybe when we get to your submission on Section 24, where the National Public Transport Regulator is described, we can check where the wording is going corresponds to what we think is a broad agreement about where we want to go with the regulator. So maybe let's hold that question off, and then let's take the specific question, which is this relationship between tourism service and other things, but the same vehicle.
Okay.
If you'd like to just elaborate or go over that and respond to the question.
So Steve, as we don't already covered in a detailed point, let me just check.
But it relates to your general point, which is what are we looking? Are we looking at vehicles? Are we accrediting vehicles or operators?
Correct. Operators is one vehicle.
Yes. Obviously, there needs to be a separate kind of thing to make sure the vehicles are roadworthy and all of that kind of thing, and that they have to have certain levels of whatever capacity and so on to do different kinds of things. But are we not getting the two things a bit muddled up generally through this legislation? Obviously, when we enter contracts, then we're starting to deal much more with operators and not narrowly negotiating with vehicles, as he colorfully but quite accurately sometimes describes. But maybe we'll come to it in the detail. Let's hold on to it because it's important and relates to your question, I think, about dual function of a vehicle.
I think, Chair, if it does come up, we will do a section on Section 93, which is certification of vehicles for tourism and transport services, and perhaps we can go into the detail there.
Right.
We just want to try and get the principle is that in order to provide the service, we may contravene strict, narrow definitions of what the vehicle is doing. And we just need to build, and we ask them for advice and process. We see it in the Gauteng one, again, that's not a national act, but we just do see in certain of the examples, there are very specific definitions in the Gauteng Provincial Act, whereby a tourism vehicle could fetch the people, it makes sense from an operational point of view, the vehicle fetches the people at the airport, takes them to the hotel. They sleep the first night, they then get fetched in the morning, now there's a tourist guide on board because there's sharing of information, and they start off down to the Kruger, assuming they start in Johannesburg, beyond. In a couple of instances, that vehicle's done three defined services, and the law enforcement at the airport are not receptive to understanding a tourism service. They have a narrow definition. If something only marginally deviates from what the conditions are on the piece of paper, the vehicle's impounded. So there's a concern that an overemphasis on too narrow a definition may cause problems for the future. That may not be the intention, but it's just an unintended consequence of the process.
Okay.
We just bring it to the attention for forward thinking.
Okay. Let's go into the specific.
Okay. Right. Well, that starts on the seventh page of the submission. It's headed by the underlined heading, detailed comments, and more meat of it. The first section on Section 8, we do recognize in certain versions that regulations by ministry is dealt with under Section 7 and Section 8. However, what's been issued today refers to Section 8, so we'll continue with the definition of Section 8. We do have some general concepts. Again, the minister may make regulations after consulting the MECs. That's very good. Again, same as SABOA, we're just concerned that we don't see stakeholders there. We do accept, however, the department's earlier comments that defining stakeholders leads to problems in an act. We're just looking for some sort of relationship to ensure that that's happened. We're very pleased with this process that's gone on for this bill where consultation has been achieved. That hasn't always been the case. So hence the comment, throw the baby out of the dishwater. We do make reference to the RTR regulations. We might well have had better clarity in the RTR regulations. The recent ones had any adequate consultation occurred. However, be that as it may. Just to note, there are certain things about the MPTR, and maybe I'll go through the section, but they're all fairly self-explanatory. We go through the Section 8, 1, A, B, C, D, E, F, and continuing. There will be specific roles that we envisage and is already envisaged in the writing of the bill where MPTR has certain acts and the inspectors would have additional ones. We're just hoping that this process is a broad process to any act, as it may, that there's sufficient wording will be created at the right point to allow the MPTR to do its function without lumping it back into the process required for general commuter transport. And it comes down to inspectors, types of vehicles, types of services, procedures for regulation. All of these could have negative impacts if the right part, and we're not legislative writers, so we lean on your expertise as parliamentarians and writers of law, that the right wording will appear at the right point in the Act to allow the right process to continue. These are ones that just concern us as it is. I don't know if you want to go through them line by line.
No, let's just note them broadly. Okay.
So I think obviously the department will say it is noted and it will go ahead.
Okay. Just and in particular, we will also lean on their expertise. But okay, you'll have a look at what they're raising in terms of regulation. Okay, let's move on.
All right.
Yeah.
And then we do a specific section on section 8.1, which refers to, again, the process of consultation, sufficient or insufficient, etc. Just as a note, I think the writers of this bill are now aware of this. There is a section brackets 1, brackets M, where the use of the word stakeholder is used. I assume you're going to remove that from section 20, brackets 1, brackets M.
Section 20, then brackets 1, brackets M.
The use of the word stakeholder is defined. Not defined, but used. So in certain parts of the Act, stakeholders are referred to.
No, we don't have a problem with referring to...
We have a problem with... We
haven't dismissed him. We didn't dismiss this morning. I think if we go to the regular, the 8, section 8, the minister may, after consultation with MECs, make regulations. MECs can also make regulations. So I'm assuming that that's why they can make provincial regulations. So I'm assuming that's why they are specifically mentioned here. We agreed that this doesn't mean to say they're the only ones that will be consulted or should be consulted. We all, in principle, in theory. But whether we might want also to then say, and relevant stakeholders of that, include a reference of that kind, which is very general and doesn't, may well be merit in that. MECs are different in the sense that they also have regulatory capacity, and therefore there needs to be some kind of coherence between those things. So I'm assuming that that's why they're specifically mentioned here. The danger is that your input, the Savoy input, and others that are still coming have seen MECs and thought, well, why aren't we there as well? And I understand why you should feel that way. I never understood it to mean everyone else is excluded from consultation. But we may, in order to make it clear, we can discuss the merits otherwise. What we won't do is list SABOA, SATSA, and the South African Communist Party. Okay, we won't do that. Okay, we might put one of those in, but we won't put it. Yeah. But because lists are notoriously problematic. Okay. But stakeholders definitely need to be consulted when regulations are made. Right. Okay, we don't have a problem with that, and therefore when it comes to the final drafting, we'll certainly bear that in mind. Okay. So the word stakeholder is not banned.
Thank you, we take that. So?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So we continuing, just for those who are keeping track, we're on the 9th page of the document, and into the second sort of paragraph area where it says section 8, brackets 1, brackets L. And it's also been noted in terms of the associations, monitoring and control of operator associations. We've dealt with that. It's just noting the concern. There's a slightly different emphasis, but we note the comments made earlier. So still we can move on. Then down to the bottom of that page, the 9th page, it's section 24, brackets 2, A, B, C, and D. This is how we're getting to the meat of the part that affects the tourism site, which is the establishment of the National Public Transport Regulator, which will give life to the concepts envisaged earlier in the various reports and processes. In that process, we're looking at 24.1 creates it, great. Regulation will define how, I'm sure. 24.2 starts to talk about who these 5 designated officials are. The number 5 may be problematic for people. We've seen it as a concept of the overguiding officials to guide this department, maybe board members or this or whatever. But obviously that's a concept of leadership, not the actual only five staff members are going to run it. Well, our concern is not the number, but more importantly, to take into account the experiences that are listed as being required. And A is public transport, B, transport economics, C, accounting, auditing, electrical, science, financial background, and D, the law. Those are all very important. We agree to them. However, if the function of the MPTR is to regulate interprovincial and, most importantly, tourism, we see that a tourism experience or even tourism transport experience, new two not mutually exclusive, do not feature there. We feel it should be specifically mentioned in this Act to give life to the fact that this is an MPTR dealing with one of its core functions is not represented in the experience.
But let's stick a little bit, unless you're going to go on more and more. This reference to five, not more than five individuals, we've agreed to scrap that. But it indicates, I'm not sure that it's been thought through properly.
Those five are dedicated officials. Their function is to make decisions. They are the decision-making body.
Yes.
Below them, the intention is to have supporting administrative staff. So it's not as if those five would be doing all the administrative work, the entire process.
But why don't we say that more clearly than we're saying it here?
So we need to spell it out better.
David, want to add something?
Chair, I think looking at this ideally for the tourism industry, we have two gateway cities, Johannesburg and Cape Town. The majority of tourists fly into these two areas, and the majority of tourism services are based in these areas. To really monitor and to issue licenses, it would be ideal if there was an MPTA office in Gauteng and one in Cape Town that did the south of the country and the north of the country, because we're licensing operators once as capable to run a number of vehicles. Well, at the moment, we're licensing hundreds of vehicles, where a company with 60 vehicles will be licensed as capable once. So they will be able to cope with it, and that would then answer all the problems that having the technical experts and the people to go and inspect the garages on a regular basis would get to know people, and there you really solve the problem. And I agree, the five people at the top are not
doing that's probably too much detail for us.
Yeah, okay.
And very generous of you, since you're based in Bloemfontein. It's best in Cape Town. Those are details. But what I'm looking for is some description of this new entity we're creating. So and it's not quite clearly developed in the wording we've got here. You have some kind of adjudication body or whatever, which is what was the five, okay, who's deciding. You have an inspectorate or something of that kind, and since it's having to move around, it needs to have a national presence, whether it's in two cities or which those are details that we need to look at, but. Shouldn't we be spelling some of that out in the legislation? Do we need to? No, not two officers. No. But what we need to say is that this new entity which we're creating, it would have a panel or whatever, which of whatever the technical word is, of adjudicators who are the ones that actually make the decision. But then you've also got a team of people who will be carrying out inspections and who will make reports, and it's on the basis of those reports, plus this other entity which they're talking about, which doesn't exist yet, but maybe will, and we also refer to tourism entities of some kind which don't exist. So reports will be received, and decisions to accredit or not to accredit will be made by a panel. Okay. But so it's not just a panel, it's a panel plus something. in light terms, because I don't want to say Pretoria, Joburg, Cape Town, or whatever, running into that detail. But I do, because we go into funny detail, like not more than five, and we also say electronic communication, which is kind of suggests that it has a virtual existence rather than a substantive existence. It needs to have a substantive existence on the ground if it's going to do the kinds of inspections and things we wanted. So I think we just need to look at, and that's why I was saying, let's reserve what you were raising about your best hopes for this, what you would like to see. Are we adequately beginning to point us in the direction? And I'm not convinced with the way 24 is at the moment. It's not major work, and I think it's what you're wanting to do as well. I'm not hearing. I mean, it's a process, and it's not all going to just emerge out of nothing quickly. But can we just look at that a bit? Distinguishing between, like, operational staff related to cluster, the entity. Presumably the entity is in electronic communication, the adjudicating entity. But the others are not just not in virtual connection to the garages they're looking at or the whatever they're looking at, so the operator's capacity and so on. And we're agreeing to add tourism as a competency we would like to see in the...
Yes, you read further, what you just said takes away part of it. We just said there's two parts missing. One is tourism experience and the vehicle inspection skills, but that will come into the life that's created by giving more substance to that.
So the adjudication model doesn't necessarily have to have vehicle inspection.
They were sponsored by
people who've got that effect. We'll have to inspect the type of signal, yeah. Okay.
We know that. So that's our concerns of Section 24, and thank you for that. We can move now to Section 25. I'm on the 10th page of our submission. Let's deal with the first comment. There are three comments related to Section 25 in different parts of it. Just a further one in terms of giving life to MPTR, and again, we'll be advised as to what sits in Act and what sits in regulation. But just a concern that one of the posts is going for the MPTR is to focus on the service it does. And in our experience with the permit boards and licensing OLBs has been that too much emphasis has gone on one sector and a little sector has been subsumed and got lost. So we just would advise, our advice, and again take this from whence it comes, is that we would like to see some sort of splitting of the administrative staff. Again, that's not ACT, but somewhere we need to have in our thinking process that one lot of staff will focus on inter-provincial and one lot on tourism, where possible to allow for sufficient competency of staff and capabilities to be able to do their job properly. We feel that just from a private aspect, but again, that's just advice. We can specialize and dedicate staff. They learn the process, they get better doing it, and you can deliver far higher levels of service. We don't want one staff official in the morning having to deal with one lot of stuff, doing the stuff, allocating tourism to the afternoon and never getting to it because of other hassles. We just noted in Section 24 that it said the minister could still add other, say, in 25.3. So let me get that numbering. Section 25, which is the bottom paragraph, Section 25.2b. 1 III and III, in particular the third one in B, that any other services designated by the minister. We just wanted to be able to have sure that the process and the staffing is thought through to allow for sufficient capacity to handle any other services it may handle and the task it's got to deal with already. So that's just advice and concern, not an act, but the act should give the essence that the regulation can take on, that it can provide the service we envisage.
Okay, but I think that's what we're trying to do.
Yes. Okay.
Whether we'll do it, whether we'll succeed, is obviously a challenge we all face, but that's what we're trying to do.
All right. Then the comment 2 under Section 25 appears on the top of the 11th page. I think, Mr. Chairman, this is where we talked about the charter and multiple use of vehicles.
Yeah.
There's a paragraph there about other types of services that are within the scope of tourism services, but maybe by legislation definition appear somewhere else in the Act and may be excluded from the control. This is, I think, where we want to put it in. Just to be aware that certain other types of services could be narrowly excluded, and then you'd have to force an operator to have two fleets, one with the tourism vehicles and one with, take for example, shuttle or courtesy service type transfer services, and you're wasting vehicles. just makes it more expensive for smaller operators to come into the market. Just to be considered, we would just, this is, I think, where it would come in.
Okay, let's just have a comment from the department here. Well, let's take this and see.
No, Chaz, I'm not totally picking up a problem with this last statement, because if there is one operation which you have got licenses being issued, and there are people that are operating that specific route, and now you've got a tourist vehicle coming from Johannesburg to Cape Town, but then you have now to allow this vehicle to do a service that there are other people that are doing it, I think that something will be wrong, because you're actually being taking business from other people.
The thing is, well, firstly, Mike said that you'd need two sets of vehicles. That wouldn't be required. The question is, do you need an operating license to do a charter service while you don't need it to do a tourist service? And the answer is yes in the bill as it's written now. And the reason is because you would be competing with other services, and the plans could come into play. And so you could use the same vehicle for both, but you would need an operating license. Now, I don't know, this is a difficult question. I'm not saying that that's the view. I'm just putting forward a concern.
I think that's what you want.
Because we want integrated transport planning and the rationalization of transport, public transport and transport generally, at the municipal level, for instance. And so we're decentralizing a lot of it. Insofar as a tourism operator gets onto that turf, then I agree it should be part, they would need an operating license to do that. It can be frustrating for yourself. It doesn't make sense from a business point of view. This is all part of a single seamless tourist package and so on. But in terms of being able to regulate transport, what we're doing here, here's where I threaten to hand you back to the operating licensing board. What we're doing here is actually creating dispensation largely for ourselves, recognizing the importance of tourism to South Africa, and that you're different from a normal shuttle service, for instance. You are different. That some of your operations might be of a shuttle kind, I can accept, and you would want, it makes good business sense, and therefore, in applying for an operating license from a relevant authority, which wouldn't be this national transport regulator, that's what you should do. And if you can't operate it with it, then you need to enter into a business arrangement with a suitably, and that we would encourage that as well, of course. So that one's forming partnerships and so on. All of that is good for transport in South Africa. But there are going to be problems and understandable problems if you're saying, hang on. We're doing a shuttle, but it's not really a shuttle, and this is part of some other thing, and so on. And the same is going to happen. I mean, you need to understand that the same card is going to be played in reverse as well. You've also got turf to protect, and therefore, yeah, okay. But you want to let's go first to the department.
Firstly, I want to apologize to Professor Walters, because at lunchtime I said I thought it sounded okay, but then I was sitting here thinking about it a bit. I think it needs more debate.
Yeah.
What the bill does provide for is transfer. That is now allowed from hotel to airport sort of thing.
Okay.
But now now you get further from that situation. You need to take a group of businessmen, let's say, to a Bosporaat. That's not tourist transport, but why not just allow it? But then you step further. Now you're taking a group of a sports team somewhere else. Now you're on the field. So it's a difficult
I agree. And the business conference becomes a trip to Kruger National Park, and you start to, and we...
I think one of the problems is the tourism operators are about the only people who have luxury 44-seater coaches. So they're the only people you can approach to do something. Yes, we can apply for charter licenses. The boards have tended to turn us down, say, got a tourism license at the moment. But you can apply for a charter license, but then you're going to need an interprovincial authority on that, and so we've now got to go back to the NPTA to get that. Maybe we should allow the NPTA to issue interprovincial charter licenses, but be very restrictive who they issue them to. Just a thought. But I think the interprovincial, in the way it's worded with NPTA, is mainly intercity. No? Provincial as well, okay. As long as it then it isn't just for intercity. That would maybe... Then it, what's interprovincial? What kind of service are you offering? A charter or tourism or... See, in UK, I think we've got the word private hire and commuter services. So you're either one or the other. So if you're private hire, you can do charters, tourism... And the other you do, and the split is there. We've segmented this into charter services, minibus, buses, various sectors, and they all sort of weave into the other, and there's no clear dividing line between them. So, but it's not that the tourism guys want to, you know, they've got the only machinery that will do that job. So there's nowhere else to go. So unless we get double licenses.
Can we ask the department to continue there? The lunchtime process. It took a while and then it didn't look. And then he come back over the next couple of weeks, let's make sure that we're getting it right and getting the two things wrong. We're not trying to undermine the capacity of running the system, but at the same time we don't want the undermining the ability
of transport authority to plan effectively for transport areas in real life. That massive thing of trying to catch the balance. Yes, thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank
you. Right. Then if we continue on my 11th page, which in the middle is section 62.1. Maybe we should turn our thinking to section 62.1. Section 62.1 in the bill is defined under the heading of exemptions. We have a concern here, as is listed in our submission, and I've quoted it verbatim from the text, in section 62, brackets 1, an operating license is not required for a courtesy service where the operator operates less than the prescribed number of vehicles set out in the regulations promulgated in terms of this Act. Aside from the regulation issue, and they've gone into great detail of this, but on the rest of page 11 and onto the top of page 12, if you want to go through the detail, but in essence, what we're saying here is, here's a process, and there are two, three aspects to this that are worrying. We want primarily to create a level playing field, and this is something that affects our smaller operators. One of the first things a smaller operator can get into is to move people from hotels to airports or to whatever venues. Not taxi, not in, but it's very specifically from hotels to airports and back. In this process of exemption, the primary one is that your government, in terms of your legislative process, the government wants to know, as expressed through the Department of Transport and further expressed through this MPTR or any other bodies or the local licensing authorities, wants to apply its mind to make sure that the provision of transport is done according to the law, safety of the passengers with due processes in place so that when something goes wrong, the passengers are looked after. The passenger outsources this ability to the government, but here we're having a situation where the passenger is assuming that the public transport is being provided, but it's actually not being taken. The government hasn't applied its mind to a quantity of one. Now, I understand this is going to be upsetting to my hotel members, and I'm in an invidious situation that my smaller members want this issue, the hotel members tell us they don't. However, the second aspect of this is that the hotels and accommodation establishments in these services are running tourists, as defined by the WTO and South African White Paper on Tourism. Anyone who's away from home, further than 60 kilometres away from work, etc. There's some very defined versions of tourists, and some of these are very upmarket tourists. In the case of an accident, the tourists would now have to claim back primarily from only the Road Accident Fund, and we already see the Road Accident Fund is under pressure. if you were using properly appropriated vehicles in the process that everyone else has to in tourism, the correct level of insurance has to be supplied by the operator in order to get their accreditation or license, whatever you want to call it. Here you've got a situation where that insurance won't necessarily be. It could be, but it could all equally not be, and they might not be aware they need to, or they might be cutting costs until they take it off. So your passenger now would claim on RAF, so we're creating a situation to further worsen the situation with RAF to be considered. If they were properly regulated under the tourism process, they would have to have insurance in place, and that would be the primary source of recompense for any damages occurred. And then thirdly, the new entrance. It's not a level playing field, particularly if a hotel runs the shuttle system services. The Table Bay has funds to run a fleet of vehicles. They employ the drivers on a full-time basis. They're in their employ, in their control, yet they don't have to apply the bill. It seems rather strange that a big entity doesn't have to apply the bill, and yet a smaller new entrant into the market would have to. It would also, bigger entrants also have to. So a Hilton Ross, for example, using a Cape Town example, is a big operator. He has to have permits. A small chap, I don't know, Faiz is tourist, would also have to have permits. But the Table Bay doesn't. We just would like to create some sort of stability and flatness there. But just to refer, not in my written submission, just in on page 8, in the definitions in the Act, it refers to the definition of public transport service, where service is provided for a fare, other consideration or reward. Now, you have to assume that no business entity such as a hotel would run a service if it didn't fund it somewhere out of the guest's payment. So if the guest pays 1,000 rand for the room, they'll probably make 1,100 rand for the room, and the 100 rand would be allocated to the cost of running the vehicle fleet. So we feel on a number of cases this should be regulated by the MPTR.
Could you just have clarity? Currently, although it may be provided for reward, it's exempted. Is SATSA saying they should get operating licenses or that they should get accredited like tourist operators? If the latter, they're not operators, these are hotel owners. I don't know how that would work.
But that's the problem. Yeah, the primary thing is exactly that. Yes, we feel that because the primary passenger is going to be a tourism-related passenger, we feel it shouldn't be an operating license of the local city. It should be, as with all its other competitors, moving those people would be in the tourism section. And that is the second part of your question causes me the greatest concern, because primarily hotels are not transport operators, and yet if they're going to provide a transport service, they should be a transport operator. And if they went through the MPTR process, they would be assessed. Remember, it's the same with the small guy. It doesn't have to be an extensively long accreditation. They have to apply their mind to seeing, can they run vehicles, and do they understand the tourism industry?
Okay, Jeff, you have the NPTA doing a technical and an operational accreditation. For hotels, you just do the technical accreditation, because what you're worried about is that if an expensive tourist gets into a hotel courtesy vehicle, that he's going to be driven safely in a roadworthy vehicle. That's it. So if he has to pass the accreditation and be watched over by the NPTA people, then at least we know all the hotel vehicles will be correctly maintained from a technical point of view. He doesn't do tours, so he doesn't need tourism experience. If the hotel wants to do tours, then he's going to pass the accreditation for tours. At the moment, we're just not looking at this. You can run any old vehicle, unroadworthy, and the tourist gets in, and just we haven't had a bad accident, but it's got to come.
Chairperson, I think there's a lot of, fine line and grey areas over here. We'll have to look into it and come back to the committee on this matter. But I don't think we can come to any conclusions here right now on this matter.
Okay, great area. Because although the definition is preferred by way of example facility to a hotel,
we just say we end up. When the strategy document was formulated, we consulted with FedHaSa, and they're very opposed to any type of regulation.
Well, that's again by saying they're completely
The hotel Safed Harsa doesn't have a transport component. No, not at all.
Just a comment on the view here. I mean, if you could courtesy vehicles, how, where do you draw the line in terms of, I mean, you speak of hotels, what about lodges? People often invade in game viewing vehicles, you know, from one place to another to go to service as well. Yeah, but why do you need a permit there? That vehicle has a roadworthy certificate. That lodge probably insured against issues like this. I'm a bit concerned that you would like to take this out of the exemption list.
The front is breaking again. I don't think one should you think to overregulate so much. The purpose of a lot of this in the tourism side is to open up the market, to follow the market easier. I mean, we had that debate 2 years ago here in the last one. So this thing really came to the fore. The idea is to follow the market also. And to be able to be flexible and offer themselves to the market.
Okay. We from our side will think about it whilst the market is the base. That's another thing about the market. The incumbent wants it to be regulated, and the aspirants want it to be free.
Mr. Chairman, in this case, it's the aspirants and the incumbents want it regulated, and the hotel guys want it free. Well, that is just, if you want to put it in process, whatever thinking and principles apply to the charter issue should probably be a guiding principle to be applied to the same one if you're wanting for consistency. However you resolve the other one, the charter is a more fundamental one, that's a bigger one. This is slightly smaller, but we thought it made that the principle should follow. Okay. Yeah. Do you throw in that Gauteng had some view on that one, but that's just a problem. All right, if I continue, on the 12th page, in the middle of it, well, sort of top, middle above, we go to section 19. Okay. Now, if we turn to section 19, there's quite a lot here, so I've done, as a batch, the concerns that concern us with the whole section of 19, and then in detail, line by line as well. The 90 deals under the heading in the bill as accreditation of operators of tourist transport services. Initially, we're going to look at section 90, brackets 2, brackets 3, brackets 4, brackets 5, and then section 91, brackets 3, and look at those together, and then into some of the details on each one. Our concern here, going back to our preamble, which is to go a flavor of how we thought our regulations would be if we were doing it. If we take our thinking from that, our concern with these sections as grouped together is that we're not sure that there's an equal importance being given to both the technical and the operational procedures for accreditation. We almost see, and maybe we're wrong, but that's as we interpret it from the wording, the required guidance, we see a primary focus on technical accreditation and the operation sort of a nice to have second cousin if you could, but we'll do the technical first. we want to ensure that the Act has it, that there's no misinterpretation allowed in the future when none of us are around to interpret it. The operational accreditation is no way inferior. Okay, and if you go into detail, do you want to stop there? Should we go into the detail there? Go through the line by line. Okay. Okay. If we read section 90 brackets 5, accreditation may be granted without such recommendation where such tourism authority has not been supplied them in the time specified in the entity's request or where no such requirement is prescribed. And you compare that to 91.3. If the MPTR is satisfied that any national provincial body is acceptable process, the MPTR may accept such accreditation by the tourism body without requiring the operator to apply in terms of subsection 1, provided they've got the technical requirements. So they're saying two lines, that we can go ahead if we don't get the tourism one, and that if we satisfy that something's there, we may not even look at it so long as you've got the technical. So we see a greater emphasis on the technical process. We take those two together.
Sorry, just go over again.
All right. So, do you want to take it, or shall I? Okay, so section 90, brackets 5, we create a loophole. And the entire section of 90 tells us the regulation where you have to do technical and operational accreditation, yet we throw in a loophole on 5. Okay, that says, but actually you might not have to do a tourism accreditation, or the operational one, if there's some reason that it allows. Okay, I understand the necessity for that. That was the intention of the set of document to report with the,
okay, but maybe, but this was
okay. The writers.
I would assume that operational capacity is something that needs to be looked at by the national public transport regulator. Not least because there's other tourism entities, there isn't many.
Mm-hmm.
So aren't you drawing two sharp distinctions? That it wouldn't necessarily have a refined
maybe we should clarify. Somewhere in the process we need to clarify that we've used, and maybe it's an incorrect use of the word, but the use of the word operational was to imply the tourism side and technical to imply the skill set applied by the Department of Transport. That was the thinking we as an industry had used, and I don't know if we've misused the words.
Okay, let's check with the
in section 9.0 sub 2, those three things have equal status. Fit and proper person. Now, there we, the legal meaning of that is it's really operational. One could add in the word operational, I suppose. And the second one is technical. We don't know what that exactly involves, except checking on the vehicles, and but we'll flesh that out in regulation. And then have access to acceptable vehicles and facilities. So there's no intention to make the technical more important than that.
Absolutely. And those are very important. The A is very important.
Okay, but we accept the comment then. As long as the two have the same weighting, that's our primary concern. How that works out and what the words are used and which entity does it. Not as concerned. So long as the report that comes to these five designated
for the moment we're making this a responsibility of the national public.
Okay, and that's fine. If that's how it's chosen to do, then that we accept that. Thank you.
If there's an evolution of institutions and we get some kind of transport and tourism accreditation entity, then we're allowing for that to happen. But we're empowering the NPR to look at operations and provide them broadly.
Okay.
Okay.
Right, thank you. That handles the weighting of the two aspects. Then into the specific of section 91C, there's another aspect to it that concerns us. It's the use of the word national or provincial tourism body. That's worrying for us. We want the concept behind us. We would like to see is that there's one standard applied across the country, and national. We feel that national would give that. I don't want to get into the debate between national powers versus provincial powers, but I worry that it opens up the opportunity for a province to jump in and claim for itself something that may muddy the waters. The second part of that is, it specifically says provincial tourism bodies. We just must make a very strong recommendation. We work with them very well. They're very nice people. We do a lot with them. Their primary set of functions is not regulators or technical. Their primary function is to be a marketing body to attract business to their specific province or city or whoever. They do sometimes have an additional development function to create the right blend of product for their province, but we're going the wrong way if we're asking them to do it. It's not what they've been mandated to do by the Act. They don't have the skills. They don't have the way to do it. We just think this is a very worrying direction to go down. We understand the concept of a tourism body being referred to, but to specifically talk to provincial tourism bodies, they don't regulate tourism, they act as marketing bodies.
I know the Department of Transport is happy to.
Thank you. Right, then moving to section, I was going a bit backwards, but it's a separate one in its own. We've sort of dealt with this, section 97. This is on the 13th page of the submission. And it deals, accredited operators must renew their accreditation every 5 years in prescribed manner, failing which they have lapsed. Okay? We have done it. Just this is our flavor of what the debate has been from Saboa's side. We've heard there. If the proper accreditation is conducted, it should be ongoing. However, we do recognize that the department would probably want a limited period, which we've heard you confirm. But then we just wanted to know why the figure was 5, not 7, because we've seen the use of 7 at other points. We would just want to see a harmony of the years processed, a suggestion there. We understand your concern.
Two.
Yes.
Close to,
yeah. So we're just looking for harmony and continuity. Will it go with whatever the department comes back to?
Hold on to 5. Let's see what we can expect from them.
Now, this is what happens when you deal with the Communist Party. They're so very, very good at this negotiation thing.
Okay. So we'll look at the possibility
of death. Okay. In the top of the 14th page of the submission, and I refer to our honourable member who will be very happy, this is probably the last page.
Section 92, bracket 3. Same concern. Cancellation must have the items back. We want to see a separate the registration. The bill talks about a register being kept of the operators. We'd like to see a similar register kept of the identifying tokens, whatever they may be, so that we know they're all given back. This is to prevent misuse of them. It's just a further emphasis of the Saboa comment. We just want to register everything that's issued so we know it's come back. The doomsday report, isn't it?
Right.
Right. Unfortunately, the last section on the page, on the 14th page, deals with section 93. This may be the shortest or the longest of the two. In our concern, if you turn to that, if you, the wording that actually calls it, you are given a lot of details behind the thinking here. The word that proposes the certification of vehicles for tourism transport services. If the flavour, and yes, I'm sure the chair will come back to us and say we're infinitely better than with the provincial licensing board, and I concur. I'm just going for a full hog here that we'll get the whole process. If we're going for the radical summary that we're establishing a relationship between the operator and the government, and the vehicles fall under as part of that, do we need a third layer of piece of paper? Now, I understand there is a concern, and I have heard it, and we accept it. We just want to think this one through very carefully. Remember, the operator is becoming the responsible entity for the vehicle, not the vehicle itself. The inspectorate and the process will make sure you're dealing with the right quality of people, whoever they may be, and they'll be inspected on an ongoing basis. Here we have a third layer, and it's returning to a vehicle-focused piece of paper. We understand the concept of identifying the vehicle to link it to the operator. we just want to think through very carefully this process of a third layer paper. There may well be cogent and other reasons. We see some of them. We just want to just not put it in because the wrong reason would be to keep an operating license attached to a vehicle because we always have them and we feel comfortable still issuing them. If they, and there may well be. We just want to think through it through very carefully.
Yeah,
but
I'd like to have
it
as well.
David said to us in the UK in the perfect world.
Well, you say a perfect world.
You're a credit and operator, and then it's up to the operator to use an accessible vehicle, and if he or she doesn't, then they get punished or just credit or whatever. What we envisage by 93 is that the NPCR will have two lists, a list of operators and a list of vehicles. And that can be that if you are, for example, a subscriber that rents out vehicles, you can have those accredited on the list, and an accredited tourist operator can use any of those vehicles. But we do feel in our situation there must be a link, and we've actually set an operating license, that you get an operating license then for all those vehicles, and you can use them, but there needs to be that link. And I don't think we at the stage yet where we could do away with that technical list. That's just our
Okay. Yeah. Right, we understand the thinking, yes, we share the same concern. We just want to, so long as the process comes up with the correct outcome. What we don't want to do is create what we have had in the temporary permit, which was illegal in the operating license board. We have to hand in a paper every 14 days, and you have to hand in a report on a yearly basis. All sorts of items of paper that were supplied, it just added to the burden of the operating license board without the ability to use, never referred to them, never used to make management decisions. So if its intention is to create something that is easily manageable, and we trust the rule because the NPCR is an entity dedicated staff for the process that flows, then we can accept that. We just don't want to create legislative burden that trips us up in years to come, and this is the thing that breaks the whole thing down back to where we were. That's our concern with it. Not that we don't share your concern, it's just we want to come up with a very careful process, and that's probably details of the regulation.
See, the idea was that the operator would, over the counter, get an operating license for that approved vehicle. That would, of course, exclude another operator from using that same vehicle, so maybe that needs a bit more thought, but we think there needs to be some kind of control on the vehicle.
I think, yes, we maybe need to sit down and talk about this one, because what concerns me is that maybe a one single operator with one combi then hires from Savala. Now, who's going to be, you know, is that vehicle maintained properly? Because they're a hire car company. Has it got public liability insurance, the correct levels on it? You're dealing with somebody who's not having a vehicle, who's not really in the business. I could go on at length. Then you get other people like Mega Coach, who've got 70 coaches. They don't need licensing under the coaches, and they're moving them around regularly. Also, when you accredit an operator, you're going to accredit him to operate bus cars, minibuses, or buses. So you're going to have different requirements to prove for his technical ability to run those vehicles for the various categories. So I think, Mr. Chairman, there is more discussion on this, exactly how we put it together, and whether you give tokens that can use on vehicles, or whether each individual vehicle is maybe has an operating license. Maybe the big company gets a number of tickets, because if you go to a workshop, you can visit, but the smaller vehicle, it has up to 5 individual permits for vehicles. Many are. I think there's a way of skinning this gap, and it's to get it right, and in discussion.
I just want to raise one issue, that the earlier document that came to our name, it was talking about high number of stringent criteria that has to be fitted in the vehicle. Now this one, this document is talking about the token and the text. What is this token? And whether whether people who are coming to operation, people who are coming, not the old people who have been there for many years, new operators who want to come to industry, whether will they afford this thing? Specifically this token, what is this special token? Is the special token is something that is in this country, or it must be taken from somewhere in Europe or Australia? Because I've seen that it's like every time when you're talking, you're referring to Australia. I just want to check that thing.
What has changed between the two versions is not that these are finding. So that hasn't changed. But the specific things that changed were around the ability, the keeping of the ability of any team to see what they a little bit born here in these rooms. It's been a kind of a, it's been elaborated by a lot of progress that we made in the Penguins of the the recognition that tourism was being responsible for institutional interest. Now, there are a number of other areas that have also been handled for you and haven't really done much about that yet. But the key thing is this new entity, which I was saying earlier,
same time not lowering the bar, so that we are transporting tourists around the same system. So, I didn't see what you're saying. I'm just talking about ahead. You can respond directly to what I mean. Because it's an important thing.
I think with respect to the token stack and other administrative costs, the usual process is actually the operator does not actually carry the burden of the cost entirely. Actually, the state, in the case of licensing and all the other ones, but I mean, yes, the operator pays just very little in relation to the total cost of the state. So, whether it becomes an electronic token or a debt or whatever, or any other mechanism, those costs at the end of the day is actually 80% of that cost can be taken. What the license fees and other methods that you are actually required to pay is actually very small component of the total cost. The second thing is that I think, yes, it's important for us to ensure that these new entities or institutions that we set up, they do not succumb to the kind of failure that we see with respect to the institutions that were set up with the NLCTA. NLCTA was described three keys, which is what the provincial government and the provincial government and then the planning authority. In many instances, I think we have seen that despite all of that, I mean, firstly, those institutions were talking to each other, so to speak. And secondly, that we've seen, particularly with regard to the board and the medical department, that those institutions have become quite dysfunctional. Partly due to the lack of accountability on one hand, but also on the other hand, where institutions were given a sense that they were allowed to, they were supposed to be arm's length institutions, but in a sense, those institutions were allowed to become what one can say, literally empires of the law, and they were doing the right thing. And we need to avoid the underlying setting, must be such that we avoid those critical failures. But ultimately, the way we will administer those institutions is very properly central, and it shouldn't be part of the current.
Thank you, sir. Sir, Alfenza asked a question earlier whether these, I don't know what he was referring to, but he was asking, does it come from what's in the token from Australia and so on. I don't think he was answered. I think it's an important question because we know tourism is still being dominated by those who were previously advantaged, obviously. And I would not like to see a situation where we pass legislation that make it difficult for transformation to take place within the tourism section. So I think that question is linked to if we support a past legislation, it must be for transformation, obviously, and also open that tourism market that is still being dominated by the whites and those who were previously advanced.
Okay, now we agree. I think I'm sure the spoken thing is that they don't come from South Africa, probably come from South Korea or China. Those are just barcode type things. Information technology has never been monitored yet. But the underlying question is And what we're doing is we're juggling
with two different kinds of things. On the one hand, our key priority and challenge must be to ensure, if we talk about the transport side of things, first of all, that this is transport, okay? That it's safe, available, affordable. who supplies it, who runs it, it's just a part of the mix. For me, it's not so much now. But it is important. And secondly, we've got to reach, in order to achieve the first step of affordable, integrated, accessible, safe, and all of those key objects, and accessible to all big issues that we're working. It has to be well planned and well regulated by transparent democratic public entities that can be voted out of office. So that's the main thrust of what we're trying to do. Okay. When you do that, regulation can have the effect of favoring the empowered. Okay, so they meet the qualifications. They have the experience. So if you require experience, of course you require it. If you require skills or resources or sustainability, then you run the danger that you simply confirm the existing reality and don't create the transformational dynamic. And that is the challenge. Okay. And we've got to regulate, of course, to make things safe, to make things so that we don't have warlords in and we don't have, you know, all the problems we're fighting with. We've got to introduce planning, we've got to introduce regulation, but we've got to do it in ways to make sure, or while we do that, we've got to look at, because sometimes we're trying to solve through regulation, lowering the bar, whatever, other problems, and it's other interventions. So we need to make major interventions by way of training, skilling, support to small businesses and so on, which we can't necessarily write into this legislation, but unless we're doing those things as well, then all we're doing is on the market, often favoring those who are established with good intentions, but we just end up adapting something. That's a complicated sort of challenge. It's not just in transport, everywhere in South Africa, those are the complex challenges. How do we have a planned, regulated, democratic space where warlords can't tell women what they're going to wear and do it for a tax for them? Because that's outrageous. How do we get public vote to regulate it, but at the same time not to undermine newcomers or small players or whatever? So we must keep asking that question all the time. I think we need to end for today. Yes,
can I just check? I understand exactly what you're saying. But the other thing that I want to check, I'm not convinced on how the current tourism industry, how does it operate. But there were seen some documents of tourism industry. It seems like it's a well-off industry. It's run by a well-off industry. My question again comes to this thing. In the 93 treaty, it talks about the vehicle and passenger who will be carried are insured with a registered insurance. So if currently it is a practice, so I don't see any people who are an aspirant operator coming into play. Because this is like when you tender for security. I've seen some other people tendering for security. You tender, they said to you, you must have a 2 million liability insurance. Now I'm just checking whether in the previous, I don't have it now with me. The NLTCA. Listen, what does it mean? What does it mean that if immediately when you put these people to that vehicle, you must ensure that all these people are being insured. What does it mean? Are we correct by saying that? Are we sure of our story? Because this to me is something. But it's right. Maybe I'm thinking of this guy who was telling me that he can't tender for big tenders. because they're wanting 2 million liability insurance. So give it to me, maybe I'm talking about that. What is the minimum of
I think in terms of the Road Accident Fund, I mean, companies like Hilton Rock pump 2 million litres a year. And they pay, what, 60 cents a litre? That's 600,000 a year they contribute to the Road Accident Fund. I don't know that a claim. Because they carry large amounts of public liability. Because if you look at a major incoming tour operator from England, Europe, they say, what liability do you have? 300 million. Okay, that's adequate. The most you can get. So most big tour operators are carrying 300 million public liability insurance on all their vehicles. And that is a demand from the people who are bringing the tourists to this country and spending the dollar. That's what they demand in level of insurance. They also send over engineers to visit your company to ensure that your maintenance facilities of those vehicles meet their specifications, knowing that we don't do this locally. We companies have very regular visits.
from overseas guys to make sure, because they cannot afford to have any of their tourists injured in South Africa without the adequate cover or put them in a vehicle where, you know, it's not adequately maintained.
Those are market realities. And obviously the tourist market is segmented as well. And there are many different model tourists that someone is saying. Well, not everything comes from some places. And therefore we need to make sure that in the segmented tourist market, we also aim to pay for liable, or down to the credit of South Africa, but which is also not having to carry liabilities of 300 million. Not every operator or tourist requires that of an operator. So we need to create also then a diversion but well regulated public transport for
higher boat tourists, legal status for that liability, and when those are kind of caught, and then by providing them that they don't need that for that car, then they should also find money to pay them, otherwise this is like a colonization of
global
ties.
Okay, we can have a policy debate on that. As I said, the liability then falls onto our head, which is the right answer. Okay, so we need to bear that in mind. Who carries the cost? South African public, but that's another form of disadvantage. But let's flag this as an issue, and the department will come back to us. This requirement of, which is not a, it's a requirement for the tourism sector, is it a requirement for public transport in general, in this act, that public transport operators need to have.
Local or international
want to make sure that some insurance is in place for them to consider the destination. We don't want them to exclude South Africa as a destination because there's no insurance. We have to have a minimum level that meets at least the entrance requirement. They say, okay, I'll consider you as a holiday destination. Yeah. Then it's up to the operator to choose where he wants to. As we say, some of our bigger operators are required by their partners overseas to have a super high level, but that's the relationship they have with their overseas partners. There's quite a lot of space in the market for the smaller operators to not deal with those sort of super big guys and find a comfortable living. Please, we must also recognize that the tourism industry, over 75% of the tourism industry falls in the small and medium category. There are very few of the really large. There's a very small number that are really large. You see them very visibly, but there are actually more people in the SME level. And that's both historically disadvantaged and historically advantaged. It's a fair blend. The industry is also making very great strides. We recognize this, the desire for transformation. We see this act as part of an empowering transformational aspect to set up the system, but we haven't forgotten that the transformational aspect of who's doing the work is to be considered. While we haven't yet achieved the levels that we'd like to, the tourism industry was the first one to sign its own tourism charter in terms of the scorecard process. We're the first to negotiate and bring to the market.
Okay.
So those things have been done, but it's an ongoing attempt. These are not to exclude people, it's to make it easier for the small guys to operate on an equal footing against the big guys.
Okay.
Currently we don't have that system.
Let's conclude on that note. Thank you very much to everyone for the presentation. We've got a couple of things just to announce before we defer. So one is that we have to meet outside of Parliament, just down the road. What's it called in? The Cape Diamond Hotel.
Where?
Down the road, where is it? It's off Long Market, corner of Long Market and Parliament Street. It's just down here, somewhere near the dark side. None of us have heard of it. I hope it's
Will there be an overhead?